Hey Thumpers, welcome to another episode of Hyper Heroes. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We've got a fun episode filled with fun. Yeah. All the good times.
Fun.
Man, every time we come on the show, there's something big, at least one or two things. Yeah. This week, it's back to directors. Last week, we had directors. We talked about Gavin O'Connor.
We kind of hit on this. The same thing we talked about last week
can be applied this week.
The circle is now complete.
Yeah, it is.
Some interesting stuff. We finally got some confirmation for what was going to be going on with Patty Jenkins and Wonder Woman. Yep. Thank God. Mm-hmm. But before we get going, I want to mention that today, you're watching this on Friday, today at 9 p.m., Hector, what's going on Pencils and Parsecs?
Holy shit. Thanks for that plug, man. Pencils and Parsecs, if you guys aren't watching it, you can catch up on YouTube. But if you're not watching it live, you should be. It's super fun. It is it's an RPG show, which means you're going to watch a bunch of actors and comedians basically make up a story, but it's set in the Star Wars universe. It's a show called Pencils and Parsecs, and tonight at 9 is the season finale, which is like, you haven't been watching it? Just jump in and watch it. You're going to see some crazy shit.
It's a good time.
Our GM, Bert Jennings, is really, I'm going to give a shout out to Bert. He is amazing. That is such a tough, difficult thing to do, and he's such a great writer, and he's so creative, and he's so cool, and he loves Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so he's got some stuff planned. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's this great sort of improvised, you know, show. You use your imagination, but you can watch it. You can like interact. You can affect the outcome and shit. It's gonna be great. And then next week,
special stuff's gonna happen.
And next week is season 2 premiere, which is another great jumping on point.
Yeah.
And tonight, if you're a fan of great voice actors, Erica Lindbeck's gonna be on the show. She's gonna be back with her character Virgo, which is really cool. We're gonna sort of see what she's been up to. So anyway, it's just fun shit, man.
Yeah. Victor, you're cool on the show, but Kim Canyon's also on the show.
Dude, Kim Cannon is I cannot think of a better word to describe this person than legit.
Kim is legit. I didn't know how legit she was until I saw her performing at the Jedi show at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Legit. I'm like, she could tear it up with a lightsaber. That is dope.
That was a lot of
She's
fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, we just went to Disneyland this past weekend. We had a lot of fun. Thank you to the few fans who found us and said hello.
Yeah, you
took some pictures with us. Yeah. Like out of I don't know how many people go to that place, but it was cool. We got to see the Jedi Academy show, and Kim plays one of the characters on there, and she was great. It was a lot of fun.
You have it on Instagram or on Twitter?
If you go on my Twitter, I posted a few photos. I think like 4 photos. She's like battling Kylo Ren, Darth Vader.
It's awesome.
It's really, really fun show. The Seven Sisters. Yeah, it was really cool, really fun.
And that's a park that's full of heroes. You know what else we did? We went and did the Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right, Mission Breakout.
Dude. Mission Breakout. And it was awesome.
It was a good time.
I love and hate that ride.
Yeah,
at the same time.
You also look at Adam's Instagram because do you have the picture?
Well, those are my stories, but I can repost the whole story.
Yeah, repost the picture when Hector looks like he's gonna poop.
Oh,
I'm
when the diarrhea strikes.
Yeah. But like, how cool was the line up to it?
It was cool.
Like, we were geeking out, pointing stuff out. Some fans pointed stuff out to us, like the original Disneyland Matterhorn Abominable Snowman was in the collector, like that kind of
the
stuff.
The restraints
so
Doctor Strange used in Doctor Strange. Like, there was a bunch of cool stuff.
Disneyland's a really fun place. I'm going back again this Sunday just because I didn't have enough.
Cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun. But you should definitely check out Pencils and Parsecs. It's on tonight, 9 p.m. Pacific time, twitch.tv/hyperRPG. Mm-hmm. While you're at it, check out all the other shows that are on there. There's a lot of really cool content if you're not watching it live.
It makes a good, if you're not watching it live on YouTube, it makes a good like podcast. Like,
it does. Like, absolutely.
You're folding laundry or whatever, throw it on. That's what I do.
I listen to it.
It's
in
like
the
a radio play.
While I
it's fun to. Yeah. It's fun to.
It's storytelling. Yeah. It's like old radio storytelling.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
No problem. Thanks, man.
Oh yeah, no problem, man.
Thanks,
no problem, man.
You know who we're talking about.
But let's jump into the first story.
Best.
About time we finally got some confirmation. Patty Jenkins is officially returning to direct, co-write, and produce Wonder Woman in an unprecedented deal. This took
co-write. Ooh, daddy like.
This is an unprecedented deal. This took so many months to figure out. I think the second that Wonder Woman dropped, everybody saw it, and everybody's sort of reception to the movie is Patty Jenkins coming back?
I think everyone's reception was actually pay her,
pay that woman,
bring her back, pay
that's
her,
what it was.
Make sure she
that's
gets paid.
A lot of people have been asking, you know, why did it take so long? And I think because this is kind of a deal that's the first of its kind when it comes to female director. She is now officially the highest paid female director. She worked out a deal that gets her 7-figure sum. Right now the estimate is between 7 and 9 million.
Ooh.
Which is huge because she was paid roughly $1 million to do the first Wonder Woman movie.
That's nuts, man.
So now she's definitely at the scale or close to the scale of what guys like Zack Snyder and some of the other directors in this universe are now making. So even playing field, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully, even playing field finally.
Listen, that amount of money is money that us regular people will never ever see in our lifetimes. But when you think about how much money Wonder Woman 2 is going to make.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Like, that's.
I mean,
like,
if you just look at how much money the first one made.
Absolutely, man.
I think a lot of people.
Yeah.
Wrongfully, some people, you know, kind of had their stacked the cards against, and they thought, it's a female superhero. The DC universe isn't doing that well. It's not going to do so well. The movie did extremely well. The movie earned domestically $409 million, and worldwide, it's earned over $800 million.
Wow.
I mean, it's a huge, high-earning movie.
Not just female-led, female-directed. It's just a huge movie.
And not only that, it's critically extremely well received. The best of any DC movie. Mm-hmm. So good for them on that. She's also going to be getting back-end profits, which is basically a percentage from the box office, which I think is also huge. So, you know, on top of
zids.
Yeah, exactly. On top of your salary, you're going to be getting X amount of money from the box office. And for a lot of these movies, that's huge.
Because you know we're going to go see Wonder Woman 2, 3, 4 times in theaters. Like,
I think Robert Downey Jr., after Avengers, he ended up walking away with like $50 million because of the back-end deal.
Disgusting.
It's huge. It's crazy.
It's great. That's nuts.
That's how George Lucas got rich. It wasn't off the movies. It was off the toys. Like, back-end dealing with the toys.
Of course. That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Also, so like I said, she's going to be directing it, producing it, co-writing it, which... She's already been working on a treatment with Geoff Johns for a few months.
Great.
She brought in David Callahan, who wrote the first Expendables movie. He did a script. I think he did one of the scripts or did a pass in the King Kong 2014 Gareth Edwards movie.
You mean Godzilla?
Or Godzilla, sorry.
I get him confused all the time, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, so, I mean, how do you guys feel? First of all, obviously, she did the treatment with Geoff Johns. Now somebody else is coming in to do the script. They have a good working relationship because they've then been kind of developing another movie that got sidetracked because she had to come in and take over from Michelle McLaren. What are you guys' thoughts on her kind of coming in and writing, producing, and directing?
Just based on her directing work, which I haven't seen it in years, but go back to Monster.
So good.
Starring Charlize Theron. That's an incredible film. It's a really, really great movie. And I want to rewatch
it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime? Okay, cool. Just based off of her directing talent and especially based off of her work on Wonder Woman... Mm-hmm. This is a person who they've got a 100% track record.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
one for one.
There's no like, well, Patty Jenkins was a producer on this other movie and it was kind of a little mixed. And she was just a writer on this movie and it was kind of a little mixed. And she just directed this movie and it was okay. And, like, there's none of that. At this point, it is 100 for 100.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So just based off of just the first Wonder Woman movie, I believe that one of the two people that are the most responsible for its success are Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot. Those are the two people that it's like, those are your number one priority. Number one priority, get them, and then everybody else who worked on Wonder Woman, like, slowly going down the chain of, like, yes, the screenwriters, the producers, the rest of the cast. Although even that is like, well, that was a period piece. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's like that essential. Although the actress who played Hippolyta,
the Amazon's
great.
Be back,
So just based off of that, man, like, I'm relieved that Patty is coming back because I felt like so much of that movie was her and her love of this character and these types of characters, you know? I just think about the Christopher Reeve Superman scene.
Yeah.
You know, the catching the bullet. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I feel like that's Patty coming through. Like, this is her being like, this is what I love about DC
that's
in this
world.
That's
what I appreciate about these characters.
About these characters. And just such a great love letter. And such a great love letter to film history, too, because Superman is such a great film.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel, man. Relief.
I'm honestly, I don't know what else to say besides duh. Mm-hmm. Like, what else are you going to do? You have the winning formula. It's instantly a not even just a cult classic, a classic movie in the DC franchise. There's no question as to whether they were going to bring her back. It's just, I'm glad my girl's getting her dues. Like, she's getting paid.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's finally, she's coming up to where she should be, you know? Mm-hmm. And it sucks that it took that one movie, you know, like... Hearing that she only got $1 million for that movie, that movie which made $800 million, she got 1/8 of that. It sucks.
One eighth hundredth of that.
One eighth hundredth of that. Not even one eighth. Split those profits
into 800 parts.
Yeah, and she got one of them.
One of the, like,
for helming this incredible work of art.
Yeah, and it's like, the thing is, like, we all know how. Or at least we think we know how Hollywood works. Everybody thinks they know how Hollywood works. And we understand, like you're saying, like, this is such a groundbreaking deal. The fact that she's a female director, unfortunately, has something to do with it. It shouldn't have anything to do with it, but it does have something to do with it.
Yeah.
But but I think that it's interesting that because of the type of environment there is right now with news on the internet, fans do know way more, or at least are so on top of the development process that I think that studios would be really, really smart to avoid even inviting any sort of comparisons
when it comes
to women working in Hollywood, people of color working in Hollywood versus the sort of standard white males that have been in power in Hollywood for decades. So it's like, don't even invite that don't even have to. It sucks that somebody has to be the first woman that's going to be paid this much. But that's Patty. Like, and it's like, going forward, because these deals are the news is going to get out there.
Yeah.
Variety's going to throw the news out. The Hollywood Reporter's going to throw the news out there. Don't even risk it.
Like, don't even just go about normally. Like, vagina or penis, it doesn't matter. Just pay her how she should be paid.
Yeah.
You know, it really doesn't matter.
Plus, I think too, you know, it's interesting because, you know, with Ava DuVernay, I think Wrinkle in Time was the highest budgeted film for a female director. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
But now that finally, like, Disney broke this barrier, Warner Brothers has broken this barrier.
Yeah.
It will become the norm
soon enough.
As soon as all these studios jump on board and they're
right.
Yeah. This is how it should be. But yeah, hopefully it goes forward. But obviously, like, I'm super excited. I loved Wonder Woman. I thought it was so good. You guys can watch our review, obviously.
Didn't you just get the Blu-ray today?
I did. I'm very excited.
I really want to watch those blooper reels.
You get a 3D? You get a 3D copy?
Of course I did.
Just for you, Hector.
No, but I'm super excited. I love the fact that, you know, Geoff Johns is as involved as he is with the writing of it. Mm-hmm. I think you have someone with the writing style and sort of the writing knowledge, script writing knowledge, is like a Patty Jenkins does, obviously, with movies like Monster. Mm-hmm. But then you bring in a guy like Geoff Johns who has that comic book knowledge to sort of bring that in, and they collaborate on a treatment. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not Alan Heinberg who did the first one of them. It's David Callahan, but it's somebody who she has a really good working relationship with, which is really cool. Absolutely. He's going to come in and pen the script.
Did they work together before?
Yeah, so they were actually developing a project which had to get sidetracked because of Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Cool. But it's cool for her to bring in this guy. He's an Asian American writer, which is cool too. So it's like it's adding more diversity to that crew and developing something more than just like, it needs to be tied to the bigger DC universe. It's like, no, we want to tell a solid, cohesive Wonder Woman story that happens to take place in this big universe,
right.
But it's about her. And I think that's why Wonder Woman was so successful in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's about her. There's nods to other things in the universe, but it's about her, who she is, coming out and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I went on Twitter and on Facebook, and I asked some of you guys what you thought about this news. Matt Light 19 says, Patty returning with a pay raise other female directors can strive for, as well as hiring an Asian American writer for Wonder Woman 2 is a win. Tori Flack says, Patty Jenkins, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Colt Bedeau says, do you think Logan should be up for an Oscar over Wonder Woman? Logan was the end of an era. It felt like an Oscar movie. I will say that those are two very different movies.
Yeah.
One is an origin. One is the end, a conclusion. I think you just treat them as which of them are, like, of the two movies, which one is crafted and made better.
Yeah.
And they're both well-made movies, so it's tough. And,
yeah.
And not only that, you have other movies that are coming out that may be crafted and made even better than that. So
I hate having to compare the two.
Right.
As opposed to, like,
they're just so different tonally and everything.
As opposed to, like, hey, let's let the comic book movie genre, the superhero genre, which normally gets poo-pooed on by Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Hollywood, you know, like the Oscars and shit.
Yeah.
Let's chalk this up as a win, like two wins this year.
Yeah, it is.
You
two
also
wins.
Had Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, you had Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor Ragnarok. Now, those are different movies. They have different emotional levels.
Sure.
I really like Spidey and Guardians, and I think Thor looks awesome, but I doubt that those three films will be able to achieve even the heart-wrenching stuff in Guardians. I don't think they're coming close to the type of emotion that we felt in Logan and Wonder Woman.
Totally.
Totally different emotions, but, like, oof, they wrecked us for different reasons.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
I go back and forth when I'm like, if Logan gets any Oscar recognition, should Wonder Woman also? Like, I'm going back and forth because I'm like, on the one hand, I think, Logan absolutely is deserving. And then I go over here to Wonder Woman. I'm like, Wonder Woman brought me to tears.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just with, like, a training scene.
Right.
Like, I'm just so back and forth. And I don't want to compare the two, but I do want to say, chalk it up for a win for both, man.
Yep.
You know, like,
Oscars are bullshit.
thank you.
They really are. It's just it's just a money campaign, basically. If you know what goes into actually getting yourself into the Oscars, you'd be like, oh, this is just like a money ploy. Anyways, besides that, like you said, Hector, we have to count both of these as a win because we got fucking phenomenal movies. Mm-hmm. And that's, at the end of the day,
that's all you can ask for.
That's what you want. Two good movies. Your characters to be done justice, and both of these characters that needed to be done justice were served proper justice.
Plus, I think, you know, what, as an audience member, what's in it for you if it wins an Oscar?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely
still
nothing.
Took your money.
For the actors and for the crew and for the director, sure. Great. I think it's recognition and all that kind of stuff, and that's good for them if they reach that caliber. But as an audience member, if I love the movie and I think it's a great movie and we can have good creative discussions about it, then to me that's a win.
Yep.
That's a win.
They're already going to do Wonder Woman 2.
Yeah.
They're going to do another X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Like, those are not
it's
in danger.
Happening.
Those are not in danger of like, we need Oscar recognition to get noticed and to get like a wider release of our film. That shit already made its money. Yeah. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah. And Oscars broke my heart. Creed needs justice. God damn it. We need Creed to win in retroactively.
Justice for Creed.
Win in
justice,
Oscar.
Justice for Wreck-It Ralph. Justice for the soundtrack to Tron Legacy. Bullshit. Those weren't nominated.
You understand.
Well, 20th Century Fox actually is sending screeners of Logan out to the Academy. I think it's the first movie
of
the year to do it.
Justice for Star Wars. Annie Hall's a great movie. But come on, guys.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Street Parazzi was the last person who made a comment about it. He says, do you think there was a bidding war for Patty and hence negotiations were this long or just a coincidence that she gets announced and then JJ?
Oh, are they saying that... Street Parazzi saying that they were quoting for
a Star Wars movie. You know, I doubt it. I think we're about to get into it, but you know, I think Patty Jenkins just at the end of the day wanted to be on the same playing field as everybody else because she deserved it. She made a movie that was financially successful, critically successful, beloved by everybody. You know, everybody loves Wonder Woman. They love Gal Gadot. They want more of that character. We're getting more of that character. And I think, like, when you have a success that sort of hits all those quadrants, it deserves, like, the people who make it deserve what they get. And in this case, they deserve all the success. And they do deserve to be on the same playing field as everybody else. Like, I hope with this, now Gal Gadot is also increasing paying scale where she's at an equal level with somebody like Henry Cavill. Ben Affleck and guys like Ben Affleck and Will Smith and Margot Robbie, they're like on a different level.
They're like
on a different
super,
level.
Superstar level.
But, you know, with like Henry Cavill, someone who's also like still kind of up and coming, you know, Ezra Miller, Ray Fisher.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all guys who are still like finding their footing in the film industry.
Absolutely. Just bring me back that Gal Gadot smile and I'll be happy. I just need to see her smile. That's it.
Right?
She's the best, man.
Yeah. I know. She's so
I love
great.
Her. She's
so
the best.
Great. All right. So speaking of J.J. Abrams.
Good transition.
This was a very, very interesting but not really surprising announcement. J.J. Abrams is officially coming back to close out the third Star Wars trilogy. He'll be writing he'll be co-writing and directing Star Wars Episode 9. Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm made a statement about it. And they say, with The Force Awakens, J.J. delivered everything we could have possibly hoped for, and I'm so excited that he is coming back to close out this trilogy. He's going to be co-writing it. Now, this was a little bit of a controversial announcement. He'll be co-writing with Chris Terrio, who wrote Batman vs. Superman, Justice League, but won an Oscar for Argo.
True.
Take with that. Take that as you want. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Jack Thorne, who was brought in to do a pass on the script, is out? We don't know. But like with Episode 7... the release date has now been delayed by 5-6 months. The movie is now going to come out on December 20th, 2019, the week after Wonder Woman 2. We talked about this last week when we talked about Colin Trevorrow leaving. And one of the things that we said was they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to stay within the Disney family and work with somebody that they've already worked with.
So or it was like if they Ryan go, Coogler, right, Ava DuVernay.
Right. Yeah. Or if they go outside of the Disney family, it's absolutely going to be somebody that they work with.
Yeah.
And two of the names that kept popping up were Rian Johnson and JJ. Mm-hmm. For me, Rian Johnson would have been a great pick, but I totally understand why he wouldn't want to do it because as soon as he wraps this movie and he's doing press, he would have to literally walk back onto set a few weeks later to go shoot the next one. JJ, to me, I know a lot of people are saying it's a safe choice. You can kind of take that as you want, but to me, it's the most logical choice. He's got the greatest shorthand with all these actors. He knows them so well.
I get so confused by people who comment about Star Wars and they're like, oh, hire JJ to make another kitty softened up movie. What did you think the first three were? And what did you think what was that to you? Was that like Ultimate Edge, Blood Gore Fest? Like,
those were fucking Quentin Tarantino movies, dude.
Yeah, were they like super edgy? Yeah. And
it's
like,
an action adventure space
how
movie.
How many penises did you see? Zero. Like, you know, it's not an edgy movie, you know? Right. Like, it's a kid-friendly movie.
Yeah.
And it strikes me as weird when people say JJ's a safe option. Of course it is. He proved that he can make a great movie.
The movie made $2 billion, and it was critically acclaimed.
Critically acclaimed, $2 billion.
Yeah.
And I don't understand this criticism about, like,
it's just...
people
It's just the flavor of the internet, man. I don't get it. I think Mark Ellis said it best when he was like, y'all need to relax because you guys are acting as if J.J. Abrams punched your mom.
Yeah.
When this is a guy who like brought back your favorite characters and made you go buy a bunch of shit.
Right.
When this new Star Wars, I remember when Force Awakens came out. I remember that people mostly generally liked it and people were losing it. And the other thing I think is really, you know, however you feel about him as a director, I think that we can't lose sight of the fact that if people love this franchise very much and they want things to change and to evolve and to be different with these stories in the realm of a kid's family-friendly movie, but still like push the boundaries in that realm. You got to remember Rian Johnson's doing stuff for The Last Jedi that like that shit seems kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker saying the Jedi must end. Mm-hmm. I keep going back to that line and I'm like, I think that's the thrust of this world, which is like it's like earth-shattering.
Yeah,
it's like universe-changing of like the Jedi must end. And it feels almost like, I'll put it this way. The original trilogy is Avatar, The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. These three new movies could be The Legend of Korra, where they sort of blow up the world. They make it more emotional, and it's very spiritual. Deconstruct it. You know, just like, what if the spirit world came into, like, all this different stuff that's going on that's, like, following the rules of this previously established thing, but trying to look at it from a new angle. What if a bad guy, Stormtrooper, turns into a good guy? Like, those seeds were planted from the first one. And I think that whatever Rian Johnson has done with The Last Jedi, which, of course, JJ's aware of because he's a producer on it. Like he's been in
he's
the family
completely
and stuff.
Aware of what's happening.
He's handed off the baton and knows what's happening. Like what really we should be looking at is what do they do in that movie? Because that's going to set the tone for what JJ's going to finish basically. Right. So it's like if you're looking for stuff to like get shaken up and it's not happening in The Last Jedi, then complain because then they fucked up.
Right.
Yeah. Because that was the movie to do it in. Uh-huh. Right. In the same way that like I want a movie as good as Empire. Well, you had to get A New Hope.
In order to get to Empire.
So this next one's the one that all of the Star Wars fans who want that coming from a good place, that sort of change, look at The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't hit all your marks, then you're in trouble.
That seems to kind of be the trend, right? It's like usually we kind of rely on the first movie to sort of set up the story. The second one comes and does something different, and then the third one sort of resolves it.
The second one's always dark.
You don't necessarily have to follow that formula, but that's generally like The Dark Knight did something very similar. Batman Begins. We built up Batman, this persona,
and then it blew
in the
it
second
up.
Movie. We kind of like broke the whole world apart and saw sort of the outcome
blew
of what the Joker did.
Apart
and, exactly. Yeah. In the third movie, it was kind of like, okay, how do we conclude this and kind of reconstruct this world so it's in a better place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a standard story arc. You know, like that's how stories are told. If you notice, any movie you watch has the meeting part, you know, they establish the story and then everything falls apart and then everything comes back together at the end. Mm-hmm. It may not be the best way, you know, like all the same way, but that's why you have good stories.
Plus, George Lucas has always talked about the idea of Star Wars is that it's kind of meant to be poetic. And it's funny because on the Blu-ray or the DVD of Star Wars Episode One, there's the whole like hour and a half documentary about the making of the movie. And he's going in and he's talking about, they have these storyboards on the wall. Mm-hmm. He's going in, he's marking like what's practical, what's a CG effect, what's a set piece, blah, 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 blah. And they're talking about the movie and he's talking about, you know, it's like, you know, he talks about how Anakin goes into the gunship and then he gets stuck in there and then he blows it up. And then, you know, it echoes what happens with Luke in the Death Star. And he's like, it's poetry. It's kind of meant to rhyme. Some people think that's dumb. Mm-hmm. And some people just don't understand that's like conceptually what kind of Star Wars is,
right?
How he designed it. You see echoes of that in The Force Awakens, I went into it thinking like, yes, it's a little overboard that we have another Death Star. Absolutely. But do I feel like it's so like out of left field? No, because Episode One kind of did the same thing. It was a Trade Federation gunship that controlled all the droids. And once they destroyed the one ship.
Not just that. Return of the Jedi used another Death Star.
Right.
Return of the Jedi. You know what I mean? Return of the Jedi kind of ended where it began.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, about Luke and his father. Circle. Like, it, you know, they kind of, that's how they wrap stuff up. So
I think that's like, those are my only wishes, I guess, with Episode Nine is, I think most people kind of look at JJ and he's not really a closer. They've seen him set up a lot of cool stuff.
Star Trek, Mission
Impossible. Star Trek was really well set up. The sequel, Lost, Alias, Mission Impossible. He kind of reinvigorated that franchise after only like two movies. Mm-hmm. And then even some of his individual movies. Some people really like the setup, but they're not necessarily crazy about the payoff. I think now is a really good opportunity for JJ to come in and say, okay, this is how we planted the seeds.
I can close.
This is where we elevated it to. This is how we close it. And honestly, like I would even love it if him and Rian Johnson maybe kind of worked on it together a little bit. If Ryan Johnson, after he took some time off, you know, he kind of came in and it's like, what do you think about this? Do you feel like based on what your trajectory was, am I kind of hitting all the marks of where you would also see it conclude? Mm-hmm. And maybe just kind of working together. So initially when this was announced, I honestly was not that excited because I thought, why are we going back to JJ? We know what we're going to get. Mm-hmm. But then I started thinking about Mike, but is that a bad thing necessarily?
It's not.
Because I really, really like The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. Are there things that I would have done differently? Sure, but we also have to remember that the movie had a really difficult job, and it's so hard for Star Wars fans to sometimes understand this. The movie wasn't just meant for you. It was meant for you, your parents,
your grandma,
your kids, grandparents, you know, like your nieces and nephews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had a really tough job where it had to unite all these generations of Star Wars fans.
Mm-hmm. And stuff that it lacked in. There are other things in the movie that it did better than any Star Wars
exactly.
movie.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Like the fact that it's the first of a new trilogy, Kylo Ren is such an interesting villain.
He's the Anakin Skywalker that we never got.
Better. And he's more interesting when you compare him to Darth Vader in Just a New Hope.
Sure.
Yeah. You're like, oh, shit. I get this.
You get a more 360 kind of like look at the character.
We don't have to defend Force Awakens. Because
Bert's not here. That's why we don't have to.
I understand people's apprehension about bringing JJ back. I totally get it. But you have to look at it from the fact of this movie shoots in January. They need a script. They need a script that everyone can agree on.
Look, there has to already be a script.
Sure. Well, that's why Chris Terrio and JJ brought in.
Has to be ideas.
They can take the blueprint and they can retool the script however kind of fits their vision.
The Last Jedi is done. They're doing post at this point. Yeah. It's out in a few months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There has to be a game plan for how this ends. Yeah. That it's now just like, okay, let's fill in those blanks. Mm-hmm. Let's tighten up the dialogue.
And that's kind of what the problem was with the script now is like they had a hard time, Colin Trevorrow and Lucasfilm had a hard time sort of uniting on what the vision is. But you know the blueprint is there. All the main kind of beats are there. It just needs to be filled in. Mm-hmm. But the thing that excites me about JJ is the fact that, you know, he knows these characters. He knows these actors.
Yeah.
It's going to be like second nature for him to come back and just do another Star Wars movie. Absolutely. And he's had enough time. And, you know, there was an interview that he did. Where he was like, I don't think I'm going to do episode 9. He's had 2 years to sort of like
mull it over,
rest up, mold over,
and
so I think spend all of his money so that they can back up another truck full of money.
So I think when Kathy Kennedy approached him and said, "Look, we're in this rut. We need somebody. We want somebody who understands this world, is passionate about it, who the crew and the cast can be very comfortable with." It's a no brainer.
It's absolutely a no brainer, and I'm not worried about this franchise at this point. Mm. I you're absolutely right, Hector, that the third movie is written already because you have to know where you're going.
Yeah.
You have to know. And it's just going to be up to JJ to come in and close, like you guys said. And he doesn't have any kind of track record of closing. And maybe this is going to be his, you know, his little swan song to Star Wars and for us. And I'm really excited to see where this franchise is going.
Yeah.
Today we spell redemption J-J-A-B-R-A-M-S.
I know a lot of people are also really nervous about the whole Chris Terrio thing. I understand. You know, I think a lot of people have a lot of opinions about Batman versus Superman and Justice League even before they've seen it. I think we also have to kind of look at the fact that the way Warner Brothers runs the DC brand and the way Lucasfilm runs Star Wars, two very different things.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I think Chris Terrio had to kind of fit the story that they wanted to tell within certain confines. Not that he won't have to with Star Wars, but I think it may be a little easier because there's a lot more stuff already set up and a lot of things that are kind of already established and determined. Mm-hmm. They have to come in and just like we're talking about, they just kind of have to close it. So he's an Academy Award winning writer, and I thought Argo was extremely well written. I thought
Argo was phenomenal.
I think he's a really talented writer. Sometimes writers have to
the other difference
have an
about
uphill
that,
battle about it.
Other difference about that too is on top of it already kind of being established. I think there's more freedom with Star Wars characters because these are new movies with new characters as opposed to trying to adapt 75-plus years of DC comic superheroes that people have very strong feelings about what those characters are
and
how they
new
work.
Characters.
And,
right.
So, yeah.
It's an open book.
You can't go back to like, well, in 1945, Finn did this. It's like, you can't. There's not.
No, because Finn didn't exist.
Yeah. Didn't exist. Some of the comments from you guys. Jason Hardman on Facebook said, people are worried about JJ directing 9, and there is some validity to their worries. As a huge Star Wars nerd, I want the best for the movies, too. They've said he doesn't finish what he starts in the best way. Well, here's his chance with the support of the entire team at Disney and Lucasfilm.
Oh, hey.
I'm optimistic. Love you guys. Keep up the fantastic work. Tori Flack says, okay.
Bridge
Dude 12 says, I'm okay with JJ returning, but I would prefer someone or something new brought to the table. Yet he might just do that. And I think
I'm exactly with British dude. Yeah, I think I'm with British dude. Yeah, it's like too. He might bring the new stuff.
Yeah.
I would have loved a Ryan Coogler. Mm-hmm. I would have loved that.
Of course.
Even if that meant let's pause Creed 2 for a second. But you know,
no, people got
real mad at me. Like, come on, it's Creed.
Hector, how and could
I'm like,
you?
I'm like, it's Star Wars. Like, I love Creed, but yeah. I want Ryan in the mix.
If JJ sets it up to where somebody like Coog can come in, and direct it. Or somebody like Guillermo del Toro can come in and do something awesome, then I'm all for it.
And this is always spin-off movies.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. Guillermo, for a spin-off movie, fantastic.
Dude,
yeah.
Even after episode 9, they may even do just like a Poe Dameron movie directed by Guillermo del Toro. You know what I mean? Like, fantastic. They could do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Directed by Diego Luna or somebody?
Yeah, directed by Diego Luna.
Diego Luna. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that tingle your jingles a little
bit? Just a lot of it.
Just a scotch. Just a scotch.
I can't wait for the shape.
Here's a fun fact. All of our cans, hold them up, guys. They're the exact same size. I just have the tiniest hands.
Yeah. You're just a small person.
Small hands. And Augustine has the largest hands of all of us.
Little do you know that I'm a giant.
He's got big old banana hands. This is like a, we're doing like a Hobbit perspective thing for you guys, where
forced camera tricks.
Augie's all the way back there. Augustine's all the way to
forced
hell back
perspective.
There. I'm real
his elbows
close,
are really on his body.
I'm real close to the camera. If you notice, Adam and I will never cross right here because we're doing a Hobbit
table
Hobbiton
is broken
trick.
Up in very complex ways.
It's very,
very
complex.
Complicated. Very complicated set.
Hector, you're drunk.
A little bit.
Let's talk about speaking of Guillermo. Well, I guess not so much Guillermo del Toro.
No, not Guillermo.
Hellboy.
Unfortunately.
Brand new Hellboy movie, rebooted. Yeah. This movie really got the fast track. I feel like it was just like a month or two ago that we're talking about, they kind of announced that a new Hellboy movie's coming out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Neil Marshall's going to direct it, and David Harbour's going to be Hellboy. Great. We got our first look at him.
They're already filming this
movie in Bulgaria.
It's pretty badass.
Wow. It's amazing. So this movie, obviously because of the fact that it's going in a more Lionsgate is distributing and financing this movie, but I think it's going in more of a Deadpool Logan route where it's a smaller budget.
They're really trying to keep
it tighter, because I think the big worry with them from the last Hellboy movies was maybe a little too expensive, not enough return. Mm-hmm.
That CG was insane on that last one.
Crazy. Ooh. Very crazy. But I think it's a good direction to kind of take these movies kind of baby steps, build it up, see where it goes. How do people react to the first one? Then move on to a second one. David Harbour is ripped as fuck.
Is that his actual body?
I don't think so.
That's got to be prosthetics, dude.
If you think
I saw Stranger Things, I saw Sheriff Hopper. Yeah, it wasn't that fit. And that's no diss to David Harbour.
Sorry,
no,
David.
Those proportions are definitely I'm not saying they're not realistic, but they're a little
too... He's like
too,
bigger than Ben Affleck.
They're a little too perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly, a little too perfect. But they did a really good job. Like, I like the vein
really
work.
Good.
The vein work they did on his body, I was like, that's almost convincing.
Yeah, it's almost really, really good. Plus, I think, again, because this movie is fast-tracked, they didn't have a lot of time. I think he only had about 10 weeks or 12 weeks to, like, fully train. You can't do that in 3 months.
That's crazy.
You have to be on God knows what to be able to do that. But I love the look. I think the look looks awesome. A lot of people are pointing out how much it looks like Ron Perlman as Hellboy.
Yeah.
But then it's weird because when you put the photo side by side, it doesn't look anything
doesn't,
like
look
Ron
anything,
Perlman.
Really?
Yeah. No.
I think it's just the Hellboy side by side. Look that looks like Ron Perlman, but that also looks like
Hellboy.
The new Hellboy.
It looks like Hellboy, But what'd you guys think of the way it looks?
I think it looks cool. I think that makeup is excellent. Mm-hmm. I think that there's like a shot where he's in a hallway or whatever. Like, it looks great. Sets the tone. I maybe would have liked a first promotional image, just real nitpicky stuff, instead of him sort of being shirtless. Again, like, we're used to seeing the Hellboy makeup fully done, especially on Ron Perlman, who, again, those were fake muscles, but it looked great.
Yeah.
Looked really great. I would have liked a shot, because there was a fan, I don't even remember where I saw it, somebody just threw up a classic comic book image of Hellboy, and he's got this great, the art by Mike Mignola, got this great, like, silhouette where his shoulders are so sloped. Mm-hmm. He's this long, sort of long-necked character. His shoulders are so sloped, and he's got this brown jacket on him, and they threw that up there, and I was like, that would have been a cool direction to go in. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't make him super buff. Put the, you know, he's got the red chest, obviously.
A little bit slimmer.
But a little slimmer, and like this just really like great like silhouette, and maybe, you know, bring the shoulders down a little bit. I would have liked that a little bit more, because again, the shirtless thing I think really does invite comparison to Ron Perlman, as opposed to if they released a photo where like he doesn't have these big bulky shoulders, but like kind of no shoulders to sort of match the Mike Mignola art. I wonder how fans would have reacted to that compared to, you know, throw that up to the comic book.
That would have been a tough thing to do, I think.
There's
only so much space between your neck and your shoulders. Yes. That, like, trying to push his shoulders down while creating an artificial neck would look a little strange.
Yeah, it's like, what does that mean? Is that makeup? Yeah. Is that CG? Is that, it's probably not in the budget. There's a bunch of questions and stuff, but even just the fact of the jacket, I don't know, maybe they decided not to do the jacket because that's also very synonymous with,
you know, I think part of it also was to just,
no-win scenario.
I think part of it was also literally just to show off David Harbour as Hellboy.
Yeah, cool. Probably.
To look at it and be like, oh shit, this is where they're going with this. This is like, they're making him big and like,
yeah,
he's got mean a presence. Looking and mean looking. Yeah. Also, it was announced that. So we talked about 2 weeks ago. Ed Skrein left the movie.
Yeah.
Because Step obviously, down. Because of all of the backlash for the character Ben Daimyo, how he's a Japanese American character in the comic books. Ed Skrein clearly not Japanese American, so he stepped down from the role. It was a very like eloquent way of putting it, and how you know, the Asian American culture or just Asian culture in general is misrepresented in Hollywood, and how if by me backing down is a first step towards you know, righting some wrongs and kind of leveling out the playing field, then it's definitely worth it.
Super classy guy.
So they got somebody who I really like Daniel Day-Kim. I think he's a really great actor.
I fucking love Daniel.
He's a great actor.
And he also, you know, underwent some crazy stuff this past year. He was on Hawaii Five-0. He was trying to renegotiate his salary with another co-star. CBS basically didn't want to play ball, so he left the show. He left the show in July. But he has been cast to replace Ed Skrein as Ed Daimyo.
Great.
And I think it's a great casting choice. And again, you know, he had some really nice things to also say about the production, and particularly Ed Skrein. He says, I applaud the producers, and in particular Ed Skrein, for championing the notion that Asian characters should be played by Asian or Asian American actors. He could not have addressed the issue more elegantly, and I remain indebted to him for his strength of character.
That's awesome.
So that's awesome. I think it's great. I think it's great that he came out and he addressed that the community, or at least these guys, are really supporting themselves. Obviously him not knowing who was going to be cast in that role, but to do what he did, and then for Daniel Day-Kim, you know, to accept it and then to acknowledge that, like, yeah, this is the first step to making this sort of better. And like Zach and I were talking earlier, and I guess there's been a little bit of controversy because Daniel Day-Kim is Korean,
sure,
and the character's Japanese. That's a whole separate conversation to have.
It is,
but
there's a lot of history between Japanese people and Korean.
So, and I think that's sort of the thing. And it's like, you know, we talk about all the time.
But he played a Korean guy in Lost, or was he a Japanese guy?
I'm not sure.
I think he played a
Son and Jin, I think, were Korean.
I don't remember.
I want to double check that. But and it's, here's the other thing too. Hollywood does have a history of just like lumping all Asians together as like, you're Asian, you're one, you know, which it's definitely a problem, and it's something that that Hollywood can always improve on. But I always think about where we are right now. I think about where Hollywood's been, and I always think of George Takei's example. That he approved of John Cho being cast as Sulu, Hikaru Sulu, who John Cho's Korean and Hikaru Sulu is Japanese in Star Trek. And he said that when Sulu was on the bridge, he represented Asian people. That sort of representation is still important. You know, it's still something. And I always go back to that, and I think that it's one of the things I love that George Takei has said, of the many things he said that I love. So that's a bummer, and it's totally valid. Like, love Daniel Day-Kim. Could you have found a Japanese American actor? Of course, absolutely. Sure. They're out there.
But let's take this win.
It is a win,
let's
man.
Let's mark it up as a W.
This
is a win. And let's run from this point on. Like, let's not go back.
It's a W parentheses CBB.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely could be better. Definitely a CBB. But it's a win. We're going to mark it as a win.
Mark it up. Boom. Fat W on the wall. That's a win.
Well, it's kind of like when a character is African American, we're not necessarily pointing out this character is either. He's either an American, African American, like born in America,
British black person, or from
what country in in Africa?
Sure.
I think once you get into those sort of political discussions,
and you try
to break it down like that, in sort of that sort of compartmentalized, I don't know. To me, it's kind of limiting.
It's limiting, and it's not constructive as to what you want to do. Like, if you spend all your time trying to cast a person of that exact same race for the, you know, for the thing that you're trying to cast, you're not doing anybody any favors at that
point. It's like, you want there to be representation. Just in a
but
general
sense.
But
you can't nitpick like that. Like, obviously, yes, they could, like you said, Hector, could have gotten a Japanese guy.
Sure.
Could have gotten, you know, somebody else. But it's a win, dude. Like, people shouldn't be complaining at this point.
I think it's a really great conversation to have, because there's sides to it where it's like, well, in the same way that you're not going to have like a white actor, you know, put on brown makeup to match like, oh, I'm playing a, like a Latino. So I'm going to, you know, because it's like, don't do that because there's this offensive history behind it.
Right.
But I think that also white actors, whether they're British, whether they're American, they'll play Bostonians. They'll play people from the South. They'll play British people that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. plays British people. British actors play all of our superheroes. So there's like, there's this kind of thing about Hollywood and the types of roles that, that human actors can inhabit. And I think those kinds of sort of freedoms as actors can be provided to an actor like Forrest Whitaker. Is not, he does not have in real life the same accent that he sported in The Last King of Scotland.
Right, right.
But my God, Forrest Whitaker is a phenomenal actor. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. Yeah. But there are still, you know, different conversations. It's all nuance. It's all kind of nuance, and you can have those sort of conversations. And especially because if people are looking at it and they're looking at it as the problem of, well, it's just this idea of like lumping.
And that the media
like lumps like Mexicans and Spanish people are very different. Mexicans, but people from Mexico, people from Spain, very different, you know? However, for me personally, and it's a personal thing, if I see an actor who is Latino and they're playing one or the other, I'm still on the sort of like, orale, you know what I mean? It's like, but
like if Diego Luna was Peruvian or Salvadorian or Panamanian or Argentinian or Brazilian or any Chilean, anything, I still would have been like, fuck yeah.
And those are all like, Luna. Those are all like distinct different nationalities that have cultures and have history and have, you know, different things. But yeah, and I think that those kinds of, that kind of shit's going to happen when Hollywood and representation becomes more of a level playing field. But the fact that we're not quite there yet, it's still nuts that Ed Skrein like walked away. You know what I mean?
Mark it up as a W, guys. That's still a win.
Plus, I think like, you know, I mean, I also look at, you also have to kind of look at like, where are these stories taking place? Not that that's the defining factor, but if you are making a movie that takes place in Japan,
by God, get Japanese actors.
Yeah, yes. Japanese actors.
Yes. Japanese American, but like, Japanese actors.
Mm-hmm. But know? In the realm of superhero cinema.
Right, it's like,
lump them all together. I'm just kidding. That's not productive.
All brown people are Latinos.
Brown people are Mexican.
Yeah.
So I went on. I also asked you guys about your opinion about this. One famous character named Lucas Eubank on Facebook.
I don't know.
You know, a little chocolate chip cookie.
I don't know that guy.
He says David Harbour looks great in the makeup, and I think he's perfectly cast. But I'm wondering how this movie will stand out from the others. Hellboy is in a character very open to a loose interpretation. How do they stand out here?
That's a great question,
Good
Lucas.
Question.
We're gonna
I
tell
have no
you.
Idea.
We're gonna tell you right now how wrong you are. Listen up, Lucas. You idiot. You stupid
cute
moron.
You idiot. You adorable little idiot.
You sexy. no, I think you're right, and I think that the point of this movie is going to be like, how do you differentiate from the last two movies?
Right.
I don't know Hellboy as well as other people. I have some friends that are like massive Hellboy fans, and even when those first two movies were out, they were still going, that's not the comics, man. Right. And I'm like, really? I'm like, because these movies are great.
Very comic
book. Yeah. You know, and I think I read like the first volume of Hellboy, Seed of Destruction, years ago. And I was like, nah, this is pretty spot on for the movie. But Hellboy fans will tell you they can, excuse me, they can do like a lot more with it. Mm-hmm. They can just go a lot further with it. They can make it less Pan's Labyrinth and Guillermo-y and more like the movie The Witch. Do you know what I mean? Like they can
darker,
just that,
cuz it's got to do with satanic stuff. It's like devil. He's the son of the Satan.
So I think there's different things you can do, but I think that the question is going to be, how do you differentiate from the past two movies?
Right.
So that's,
well, I think it's a tonal approach. I think it's primarily a tonal approach. It's kind of the same thing if you were to look at, you know, I'm not comparing Guillermo's Hellboy movies to this, but I'm saying if you look at the tonal difference, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin versus Batman Begins in the Dark Knight, like that trilogy versus the old movies, right? It's tonally extremely different.
Yeah.
Same character, similar storylines in some capacity, but it's like it's really different tone, a more serious tone. Like this is gonna be kind of more in line with like what Logan is or Dark Knight is in terms of tone. Whereas Guillermo's is kind of more of like a fantasy. So I think that's the big difference. It's like, they're two fantastic. They're like, it's one fantastical character, but it's kind of set in two very different earthbound universes, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I agree with that
100%. Lion Mutter says, was iffy about David Harbour as Hellboy, but the first image looks dope. Hope he honors what came before while still making it his own. Corzuelo says, I'm also excited for the new Hellboy. I watched the Del Toro ones again.
That's dope. Cool. I need
That's
to do
how
that.
You do it. That's what that. We're probably going to do before we go and watch this next one.
Cool. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Cool. Yeah.
Last thing we're going to wrap up talking about is Chris McKay was talking about Nightwing. Mm. He's doing promo right now for the Lego Ninjago movie. He's a producer on that
Which
movie.
Which I hear cool. is great.
Yeah.
By the way.
Man, those Lego movies, man.
My buddy Pooch did some ADR on it.
Then how to kill
he
that.
Said it's good.
He says it's really good.
Nice.
I love it.
They know how to make those Lego movies. Yeah, man. They're
definitely they're got their own.
They're doing
style.
A good job. They're doing a good job.
They're good. They're
super good. So it was announced shortly after Lego Batman, I think, came out, a few months after that, he was going to be directing the Nightwing movie. And you know, Chris McKay, he's actually surprisingly been pretty vocal about kind of how he feels about Robin, how he feels about Nightwing, the story of Nightwing, how he gets to where he is, and exploring all that. One of the things, so he was doing an interview with Collider. Talking about Ninjago, the Lego Ninjago movie, and he says, I'm a big comic fan.
Let me stop it right there. This is clear. If you watch the Lego Batman movie, he's a massive fan.
Oh, of Robin.
Of Robin, of Dick Grayson, of the lore. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to remind you guys in the internet, dude has a Catwoman tattoo on his arm. He loves Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also has
a Captain America shield tattoo.
That's right. You interviewed
on his
him.
Other arm. I had a chance to talk to him.
Nice.
The guy knows and loves comics. Mm-hmm. Like, so this isn't just the thing. You hear this from...
This isn't PR fluff.
This is not PR.
Don't tell fanboys about those tattoos, by the way.
He's got them both.
You can't do that.
And he loves them both equally.
You can't do
he
that.
He hasn't exploded yet.
Do you not understand how comic books work?
Two different companies, and he hasn't exploded.
He hasn't melted yet.
Warner Brothers hired him.
Don't publish this video. Don't publish this video.
Warner Brothers hired him knowing what
with
tattoo,
a Captain America shield tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. The world's going to explode.
But yeah, but please, yeah. So
okay,
he's a
keep
big
going.
Comic
yeah,
fan.
So he says, I'm a big comic book fan, and being able to do the story of Nightwing, to do a Dick Grayson story, which is a character that every single person in the world knows but has never really had a lot of screen time. They make a billion Spider-Man movies and a lot of Batman movies, and they've tried the Hulk. When they were making the Tim Burton movies, they were like, oh, maybe we'll do Robin in this now. Maybe we'll save Robin for Returns. Nope, we'll save it for the next one. With Christopher Nolan, people were like, is he going to do Robin? When they made Batman vs. Superman, they were talking about it. I'm a big fan of underdog stories, and he is one of the biggest underdog stories in comics.
Cool.
And he's a character that I grew up with, and I like the arc. Mm-hmm, and like to me, those are all positive things about the character, and he's right. Mm-hmm. It's a character we've gotten very limited sort of knowledge on in the film universe, hugely prominent in Batman the Animated Series and all the animated
good.
Series that followed in the movies and stuff. But cinematically, we had Burt Ward, who was in the Batman the movie and the Batman series. Mm-hmm. Then we had Chris O'Donnell, who played him in Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. And that's it. We haven't had Robin cinematically
unless
since.
You count Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character.
I mean,
but is he, Robin
is
Blake?
He,
right.
Is he really? He's not.
He becomes
something.
He was like an amalgamation of all of the sort of versions of Robin.
Yeah. He was the
but
all the embodiments
that becomes
of
Batman.
Robin.
But that's different than Dick Grayson.
Right.
Dick Grayson is a character like Chris said, the first character really in comic books who was allowed to outside of I would say maybe Spider-Man, who in the 60s was allowed to graduate high school and go to college after Marvel Comics asked the fans, do you want him to stay in high school or do you want him to graduate? And they all said graduate because they were reading Spider-Man comics along with him.
They were getting older as he was getting older.
And outside, I think, of that character, Dick Grayson was Robin from 1942 until 1986 or something. 1940 or 41, all the way until like 1980. You know, we're talking 40 years of Robin. And then when he stopped being Robin and became Nightwing, that was one of the first times that characters in the DC universe absolutely evolved. Yeah. And then Batman followed suit. And then Superman got married to Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And then all of these different changes and evolutions started happening to these characters. And then and then DC Comics really leaned into legacy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Barry Allen died. Here's Wally West.
Yep.
Right? Hal Jordan went crazy. Mm-hmm. Here's Kyle Rayner. Like, that great story of evolution... Chris nails it, man. That's absolutely one of the strengths of that character.
Totally. Well, yeah, and I think that absolutely is one of the key components of not only the evolution of Robin, but also how Batman evolves as a character. For 40 years, we kind of got the same adventures of Batman and Robin, the same type of stories. Some of them challenged certain things, but mostly it was Batman and his boy wonder, his young ward, Dick Grayson. But once he elevates to Nightwing, it's like you look at the dynamic and the relationship differently, because now you sort of see Batman through the eyes of Dick Grayson,
right?
And kind of how he perceives Batman, how he perceives that world, how he sort of feels about Batman. Not only as a father, like he's a father figure, but he's also his partner.
Right.
He's also kind of fucking nuts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the fact that he took in this 10-year-old kid and trained him to go fight crime and like
to
fight
bad
guys.
Assassinate people.
Exactly.
Well, not really, but you know.
But yeah, but to sort, but to go out there and like really beat the hell out of people and to reach a point where, you know, you get to a point in your age where you're like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
I don't want to be beating people to a pulp like
this. Who's more of a psychopath? Somebody who, like you said, Augustine, will train a kid to assassinate people?
Yeah.
Or who will train a kid to not use lethal weapons and still go out and fight people that have guns?
Don't
kill
people.
Who's crazier?
Hurt them
like,
really
Robin,
bad.
You're going to use these gadgets. Yeah. Like, what? These guys have guns, dude.
Yeah.
Bruce, these guys have guns.
No.
I know.
Here's a rope.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
No.
Here's a boomerang and a
that
smoke
has
pellet.
On it.
Yeah,
he's got a Colt 45.
Yeah.
No problem. Just throw two.
Boomerang in this one.
No wonder he was like, I'm out of Gotham. I'm out of here.
I'm going to Bloodhaven.
I'm moving to Bloodhaven.
Peace, Alfred, I'll be back to visit. No, but it's cool. And I, as much as I really would like to have seen the rise of Dick Grayson as Robin and then see that transition, even though we're going to get him sort of, it seems like we're going to get him starting off as Nightwing. Mm-hmm. I'm still interested to go back and see
flashbacks.
The history.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to get flashbacks. Absolutely. I think that they're going to establish that. Because here's just another thing that's exciting about Dick Grayson turning into Nightwing. That means we get Jason Todd, the failed Robin.
Which we kind of have set up.
I think that they're going to lean into that. And then that also means that after Jason Todd, we get Tim Drake.
Yep.
The new hope, if you will, for Bruce Wayne. Yeah. And that's really exciting. But like, I think they're going to do flashbacks and establish Dick as used to be Robin. Mm-hmm. And then he left. And now he's Nightwing now.
See kind of what was like, why did they split? What was the thing that led them
that
to?
That is a very, I think it's a very important part in making Batman more of a relatable character, first of all, because, you know, we all deal with family issues. And he's definitely, like, he blocks himself off so much, and this is the one opportunity to have family, and then he leaves because he disagrees with them. It's a great story to tell.
Yeah.
And then it opens it up to the whole Bat universe, not just the Robins, but everybody else that's in the Bat universe.
The women.
Batgirl, Batwoman. I mean, Catwoman.
Yeah.
Because she's a big part of...
Spoiler.
I mean, who's Damian's mom?
Yeah, Talia al Ghul.
Yeah, so it's a whole another universe that we get to explore in a different way besides through the eyes of Batman.
Yeah. And I think to me that's what's really intriguing about maybe the approach of this universe is how can we tell stories set in Batman's universe that aren't necessarily just about Batman? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's focus on Batgirl. Let's focus on Robin Nightwing. Let's focus on Tim Drake, Damian Wayne. You know, like all these
other.
Oh my God. If they made Batman Beyond, I would die happy.
Put Ben Affleck in some old age makeup.
I just hope.
Well, if Batman they keep making these Batman like movies in like 10, 15 years, they'll be able to just naturally age him.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I also like what Chris McKay said about sort of his approach to the movie.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to go in a less sort of CG approach, and he says it's going to be a fucking badass action movie, a lot of heart and emotion. It's actors. Hold on.
It's going to be a crazy fun ride.
Whoever gets cast as Nightwing and any of the other actors around are going to go through a fucking boot camp experience because it's going to be a lot. I'm not going to do a lot of CG. It's going to be all real shit. It's going to be real stunt work, and they're going to need to know all the stuff on camera and do it credibly. For the cast and the crew, it's going to be a visceral experience, and for the audience, it's not going to be like a lot of these movies where there's a lot of CG and flying and things like that. Everything he does is going to have to be real. His superpowers is being really fucking good as a human being at fighting and gymnastics and shit like that. So you're going to see that on screen. It's going to be fun.
I love that the director of the Lego Batman movie was dropping so many
I know, I know. He's cussing like we cuss
on the
show.
He's enthusiastic as
hell. One thing I got to say is I get it. I get where you're coming from. But you also have to realize the universe you're in. These guys don't do that shit. And there's a reason why there are only a few select Olympic gymnasts in the world, because it's very difficult to
do.
You're asking a lot for these actors to do every single move on point.
Yeah.
You know, because it's difficult. It's not an easy thing to learn, and you have a 6-month shooting schedule.
Right.
There's only so much you can do. So take
it
easy.
There's only one Tom Holland for every superhero.
Right, exactly.
Franchise.
Just take it easy. Like,
here's my piece of advice.
It'll be fine.
Just like how Dick Grayson and the Flying Graysons are from the circus, go to Cirque du Soleil. Cast people from Cirque du Soleil. They will do the shit that you're looking for. Have them be the thugs that Robin fights or Nightwing. Have them be you know, that kind of element, and find a really charismatic human guy to play Dick from that
world,
and then train him on the acting side.
Because they already do acting already. The Cirque du Soleil shows are already acting shows.
I think get the Cirque du Soleil people. That's what I want his new origin to be. Is like he's Cirque du Soleil,
tap
and his parents get shot.
Yeah.
And you know, like, because there's no who cares about like people say there's no circus anymore. I'm like, people shell out money at Vegas to go see Cirque du Soleil.
Right.
That's your origin story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's still a circus, by the way. It comes to my hometown. Like
I know,
year,
but it's always like
we just had one here.
Yeah.
It's always like real like. Like the pristine circus is Cirque du Soleil. Like right. That's
was
where,
there
you know,
ever a pristine
back in the
circus?
Day? Well, there's a Hugh Jackman movie coming out about that.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Showman.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
We'll learn.
Yeah, we'll learn about
if they were ever good or if the circuses were always shit.
Always shit.
Circus-i?
Yeah.
Is it circus-i?
Circus-i? Yeah, the plural of circus is circus-i.
Circus. It's Cirque.
Not circuses?
Circuses.
Okay, I guess not.
Circuses.
No, but I'm excited. I mean, I think he's got the right amount of enthusiasm, and I do appreciate the fact that he at least goes out of his way to say, like, we want to try to do this as practically as we can.
I think
that's and that was to me like one of the disappointing things of like Spider-Man Homecoming was I wish we would have seen Tom Holland do more of his like own sort of gymnastics.
Sure.
We know he can.
Yeah. Sure.
He posts absolutely about it on Instagram all
it's
the
tough
time.
Let me tell you though, it's tough though, man, because that character is set up in a world where there's CG Iron Man.
Sure.
And Ben Affleck Batman's character is set up in a world where there is CG Superman.
Right.
So I was thinking about how Ben Affleck Batman, how CG was used to enhance his abilities and make him look very non-human when he was flipping around walls, crawling around walls, and at the end when he was fighting Doomsday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And part of me is like, yeah, I would have loved it if that shit was practical. Even the fight that was very Arkham City when he was, you know, when he was fighting all those guys
and
smashing their brains up against the wall and all this blood and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the other side of me is like, yeah, give him a big ass CG Batmobile. Give him the sort of CG enhancements because he is standing shoulder to shoulder with Superman and Wonder Woman.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate the ambition of like, we're going to do it all practical. It's like, yeah, but I don't want him to look like he should be. I don't want him to look like Charlie Cox Daredevil in the Defenders. It all works because there's other Defenders characters, but you have Charlie Cox Daredevil compared to Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Right.
Spider-Man's going to kick his ass every time.
Every time.
Every single time. And I'm like, Nightwing needs to be a character that's like, he will one day be on the Justice League.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
All of those characters are kind of his peers.
He needs to be up to par with Batman.
Yeah.
Because he has trained with Batman.
So if Ben Affleck's doing CG stuff, give him a little bit of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
I think what he's saying, though, is he doesn't want to feel like that there's
abilities.
A reliance
like a
on
big
CG.
Good. With orange fire and gray stuff and explosions.
Like a giant
and
fight sequence with all that. Yeah.
And a big gray monster never mind. I've said too much.
Because he made
comments are on fire. Comments are on fire.
I didn't say anything.
It's funny because he made a full CG movie.
Yeah.
Chris McKay, the director of the Lego Batman movie. But the whole idea behind that full CG movie was to make it look like it was practical toys.
Of course. Yeah,
like, that's the
yeah.
kind of like approach of like, okay, this is all computer.
Yeah.
We're going to make it look like it's little bricks that were moving.
They're to scale. They're to scale.
Yeah. It's all to scale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
I'm super excited. I can't wait for this Nightwing movie. His enthusiasm makes me even more so excited.
Yeah. That's
he
that's
answered you on Twitter.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He answered.
He has.
When
times,
you asked, hey, there wasn't an announcement of the Nightwing movie at Comic-Con. Yeah. How come? He like answered. And people grabbed that as a story.
Wow.
And they were quoting Adam's Twitter like question
nice.
As like a fan asked Chris McKay, and I was like, "That's my boy.
That's my boy. That's my hyper RPG boy right there."
I mean, you know, I'm super excited. Again, like I want to see more movies outside of the Batman universe.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're gonna go into this sort of approach, we're gonna explore the psychology of these characters differently and not just make a Batman movies. Then I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm super excited. But guys, I want to know in the comments below. We're Dunsky Dunzo. We want to know in the comments below what you thought about all the topics that we covered tonight. Make sure you guys leave a comment below. Also, jump to our Facebook, facebook.com/hyperRPG. I'm going to be on there and posting more questions on weekly topics. We want to try to get all the communities involved. Throw it out there. Try to get all the communities involved from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You guys are so awesome to talk to. You guys are so good at leaving comments and talking to us on Twitter.
Yeah.
We appreciate your guys' support, and we appreciate you guys coming out here and watching us every single week. Make sure you guys also subscribe right here, youtube.com/hyperRPG, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/hyperRPG for the latest live content that we're doing every single fucking week, rain or shine, unless there's a holiday, sometimes we get out of here, but usually not. Hector, where can everybody find you?
Find me on the internet at Hector is Funny. Be sure to check out, if you're interested, if you like Star Wars, Pencils and Parsecs tonight at 9 o'clock on Hyper RPG's Twitch channel.
Do it.
Yeah. I'm not doing a cool show, but you can find me at @el_santotaco.
And I don't know what I'm doing this weekend other than going to Disneyland again. Maybe I'll see you guys
find
there.
Find him at Disneyland.
You just find me at Disneyland and at Adam Havoc on the interwebs. Thanks so much for watching. We'll catch you in the next episode.